characters a long time. And some characters, I wrote some stories, and up till now, me myself is not that one who wrote the stories. And the character developed, and sometimes I feel that if I write the story again, I'll add something about this character. Yeah. The other thing, actually, many times I love the playing, like the artist plays, and to make different features from different real characters. I collect them together and put them in one character, not just for playing, but in this case, it can carry many things I wanted to carry it or to deliver it to the reader. Yeah, and the main things I'm interested in my life, the world and the borders of the world. Many times I feel that people made the borders. The earth actually in its natural way, there's no borders. Yeah. The humanitarian thing, the pain of people, the hope, the love, the enthusiasm, and so on. And the change, of course, for the best, not for the wrong thing. This is covered me and covered my character and covered my collection.
That's beautiful. That just makes me think about characters. All of you have such diverse and interesting characters. Like all of these characters, it's incredible in a short story. Like in a novel, you've got your cast of characters and they stay with you, right? And in the short stories, they're kind of all reinventing. There's just so much variety. And all of these characters were so compelling. And it just makes me wonder, was there a particular character that was really fun to write, or that was really difficult to write, or a character that just kept writing itself?
I had one of those in the collection that the story is called Rahel, and the character is also Rahel. That was so fun to do because it was the character. It's probably the character was like very different from like me and like my. Like just my story, and it was so interesting to just give her, to make her so bold and so unapologetic, and just really somebody who, like a woman who likes herself, you know, and to kind of put her at the center, and mirror that with this person she's in a relationship with, who is not very admirable. And to kind of do it in a very non-judgmental way. And that story was also, you know, it kind of goes between these point of views, but it was, I didn't want to give a heading to any section. I didn't want to say, okay, this is Rahel's section and this is Freddie's section. I just wanted it to happen, like, seamlessly. And there was a lot of work required to make that perspective shift seamless, but at the same time, you know, not to make it, like, too awkward, right? So that was so fun to do, and that was a story that just kind of came to me in like 2 weeks, and then I was just, you know, just like enjoyed editing after, and that's yeah. And there's other stories that took me months and months to write, but yeah, that story was, and that story remains, and the character remains my favorite in the collection. Yeah.
Great. I love that she's a woman who likes herself.
Yeah, characters that you like. Well, I think there's most of the stories in Skin are contemporary. There's the novella that's set in the 1980s, but there's one that leaps back in time. It's called Roxanne. And do you guys know Cyrano de Bergerac? Most of you? Okay. 19th century play set in 17th century France. Movie versions proliferate, and I went to see a production of Cyrano, guy with a long nose who is in love with his cousin Roxanne. He's a poet, swashbuckling soldier, but he feels himself to be really ugly, so hides behind this handsome young man named Christian to pen these love letters to his cousin Roxanne, who thinks that they're being she's being wooed by the beautiful Christian. And I was watching this production at the Shaw Festival, and I suddenly thought, this woman is smart. She's not a dupe. I don't believe she's taken in by this. So what happens? What happens then? What does she do when she discovers what's going on? And that really fascinated me. And so to create a Roxanne that was different than Rostand's Roxanne, and to give her all the moxie and the smarts, but also be true to the men in that triangle and just complicate things a lot was really interesting to me and really fun. And I've never written anything historical, and so to try and create a voice that was true-ish to 17th century France and also felt quite contemporary because I was feeling it through a very contemporary lens was an enormous fun.
Yeah, it was the most original take on Cyrano de Bergerac that I've ever read. It was delightful.
Yeah.
Well, I comment on Dick's answer actually about writing the story in 2 hours or two weeks or in 14 years sometimes. Once I rent a house in Damascus when I was high, and the lady, the landlady, told me a story. It was in 1979. I'm still trying to write this story. I feel that it's bigger than the language I could deal with, or the style, or whatever. I wrote it, I think, more than 40 times. But I feel that this is not a story. On the other hand, once I was watching some people in the street in Syria, walking in the street, a small family, a flash, something like a flash comes. I get to my table, and I found a kind of bag of paper and a pencil. And I start writing. And I published it after a week. So sometimes you feel that it's very difficult to write this specific story. And sometimes, wow, it comes by itself in some way. Yeah. About a year ago or 2 years ago, my agent told me, can you transform this phrase into a picture book for children? I told him, I'll try. I said the phrase. I told Francis E. Tanney at the time the phrase. And then, when I wash dishes, when I walk, all the time I think about that. After a week, and at 4:30 a.m., I get to the basement, and in 4 hours, I wrote the picture story and revised it 3 times and sent it to the agent and go and sleep.
Yeah, so often at these events, people will say, like, how long does it take to write a book? And I think the answer is pretty definitive here, anywhere between 2 hours and a lifetime. Okay, humanity is really shown in all of its brutality in all of these collections. But there's also so much love in these collections. And one of the quotes from Jamal that I love and that I think expresses this is, he said, one can't explain the darkness without understanding the light. So I'm wondering how you all managed, because it is beautifully balanced in all of your collections. How did you balance these two opposing aspects of human nature and make it feel so real?
Yeah, I think for me, when the subject matter, or like the story that I'm writing about, is really painful or heartbreaking, the stories kind of automatically get funnier, those stories. And I think that's one of the things that I intentionally try to do. Like, I think it comes naturally to me, but also I try to do that very intentionally, because I do think, like, especially racialized writers' stories are not considered funny typically. You know, it's not something.
But they are.
I mean, people are, right? So I think it's really important for me to put that in the story. And a lot of times that humor becomes more evident because of the perspective that I choose. Right? Like the story I was reading earlier, Bestsellers, it's a story about this miserable divorced person who is living in a basement. Like,
yeah.
But that is one of the funnier stories in the collection. And I try to use craft to do it in a way that is not, that's kind of like not too obvious, but then it's funny. And in that story, for example, the way I did that was like the hard part, like the heartbreaking stuff, is only in the little image, the snippets of the ceramics that she makes. And that's kind of set in a very over-the-top, dramatic, you know, almost like satire, but everything else is funny. And that was a very intentional choice. And any time I slipped from that, I would go back and be like, I'm not allowed to do that. And so I find constraints really helpful to kind of stick to what you're trying to do so that, you know, there's that structure kind of holds it together.
So
interesting. And like at the end of each snippet,
you get the like light on,
which
made me laugh every single time. Yeah.
Yeah, the darkness and the hope. I was thinking about this in the context of the opening novella, Benevolence, in which this Canadian, youngish Canadian woman, she's approaching 30. It's told from a president, which she's. You know, later in life, looking back at this time when she was living in New York, trying to make a go of it as a performance artist, not making enough money, forced into being a substitute teacher, and she doesn't really know what she's doing. And there's a student in her class, her senior high school English class, who is in desperate need of a home, and she has a spare bedroom, and this act of slightly thoughtless altruism, she invites him to move in with her. And, you know, things ensue, but not necessarily, the story does not necessarily go where you think it's going to, but there's, you know, there's tension and darkness, and I hope also comedy, because this young man also refuses to leave. And there's, you know, there is humor in that. She's got him, but she can't get him out. And so I really wanted to explore all, you know, all the nature of this intimacy, though there is an underlying loss there. And then in a later story, actually the most recent story in the collection, Derecho is about a man who becomes obsessed with extreme wind events, and I took actual wind events from I think 21 and 22, Hurricane Fiona, this actual derecho, which is a big straight wind formation that came across on Ontario. But I didn't want to write a gloomy climate crisis story. I was really interested in a guy who basically has a love affair with the wind, and you know, he's as excited by the wind as he would be for any other kind of lover, and his wife actually turns to him at one point and says, "Are you having an affair?" And I wanted to turn all that grief on its head and just look at how this guy pays rapt attention to something that it would be so easy simply to see as horrific. And yeah, just switch something up emotionally. So that was the guiding light of that story.
Oh, thank you. Well, actually, in the heart of darkness, you feel that you are governed by dreams and hopes. If not, you're not going to survive. So, as a personal experience, out of writing and art and anything else, in the worst moments in my life, I feel that this will pass and something else will come. Yeah. Now, how to balance different aspects in a short story? Well, the experience is important in this. And thinking about different things. And sometimes, as my mom said, once she put curtains to the windows, Dad asked her, how did you choose these amazing colors? She said, the walls choose the color. The color of the walls choose the color of the curtains. So, in writing, when you write, and you are going to tell something or deliver something or make the character do something, you have to make the unity, which is a house with curtains and a story with a style and with characters, with evidence, with etc. Make a kind of to convince yourself first and your reader later, then you are going to plant something in. But if the question is about darkness and light or bad and thing, you know, we have to plant hope, we have to plant a dream as writers or a human being. This is my idea actually about that. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's really beautiful, and I think, you know, it's hard not to feel hopeless sometimes, and I like the idea of kind of learning from fiction, and I've been thinking about that with all of these collections. I was thinking specifically about Hugh, that character that you're speaking of, who falls in love with the wind, because it's in the face of this large thing that is unstoppable, and so how do you grapple with it? And I love that the answer was not constant pushing against it, but in a kind of like radical love. I thought that was such an interesting idea. So we only have time for one more question from me, and then we're going to open it up to the audience. And this is a bit of an invasive question, so I saved it for last, so you won't all hate me. to know how much of yourselves are in these stories. I know you, Catherine, talked about it being a bit autobiographical, and I want to push further in that. And I was wondering, like, how do you draw from your own experience, but also balance it with the demands of fiction and the needs for privacy? Because we, you know, we have to draw from partially from what we know and partially from imagination, and I'm wondering how you grapple with that.
Like, I grew up in Saudi Arabia, and I grew up in a very colonial education system. So I really did. Most of the books I was an avid reader, and most of the books I was reading were by Western authors. And I think the first time I read a book that was not by a Western author was Arundhati Roy's *The God of Small Things*, which is so amazing because recently Catherine and I were at her Toronto book launch, yeah. And it was just such an incredible thing to see her there. But when I read that book, I was just I mean now I say that I was blown away by it, but honestly, at the moment, I was probably 13 or 14. I was just like enraged by it. You know, it was kind of like, I felt, because before when I was reading fiction, it was always kind of a safe haven. I didn't realize it, but I was invisible. I wasn't in any of the stories. And it was a source of comfort, but I never had considered. I didn't have the imagination then to know that I didn't see myself in these stories, and I was fine with it. Right? So when I read Arundhati Roy's book, she's from Kerala, which is where my family's from. And she's talking about this little village, which is very similar to my great-grandmother's village. And I thought, I just felt so exposed. And I felt like, this is how you write a story from the center of who you are, you know. And it took me years and years to actually start writing like that, but that's what I try to do in fiction, right? Like, it's... Otherwise, I don't really take much space. Like, going about in you know, in my real life. But in fiction, on the page, I feel like I have more courage, and I try to center myself and my experiences in the stories. Some of the stories are kind of drawn from my real life experiences, some are not, and I do a lot of research in those stories. But the ones that are drawn from my real life experiences, there are a few about a girl in a boarding school, and then later in another story she moves to California. So those are kind of taken from my real life experiences. And then also I make the characters bolder and like things that I would not have said in real life, and like so I try to do that, but I think it's a mix. Like it's an intentional thing I try to do.
Yeah, and it was wonderful to be at the Amadati Roy event with you. We were sitting way up high, but it was still to be in Convocation Hall with 1,700 other people, witnessing her and speak about her life and her memoir about her mother was really extraordinary. I'm not a confessional writer by nature. I don't have a very confessional impulse, but I do find there's something about stories and the way you can almost be prismatic in them that's allowed me to put real shards of myself in these fictions in a way that I can masquerade. It's not that the novels don't also touch on really deep truths, but there's more of a window, and it's always just a shard, like a deeply honest shard, in some of these stories. At the same time, I steal other people's stories all the time, and I love to steal other people's stories. So the collection is also full of thefts. And so the trick is to weave those together. But there, there's a story about a mother-daughter relationship, which is not exactly my relationship with my mother, but it has some shards in it. But it also is a story about, an airborne toxic event that takes over a performance of the sing-along Messiah, which is something that I went to with my mother for many, many years until COVID put a stop to it. But there's something about that collision that, is both true and not true. But, as in all fiction, it's a way of getting to deeper truths.
You are not the only thief. Anyway, we are going to watch the others sometimes and derive something, derive features, derive behavior, derive something astonished us. Loyalty, beauty, braveness, whatever. Actually, in general, I think that the experience is the most important thing. Watching and thieving is part of the experience. Embedding the story and embedding the characters. For me, actually, many times I imagine a character and write for a long time, and I discover that this character is that person, and that person, and that person. As some people I knew before, and it's not imagination. Even if you imagine that there's a fox keying the cloud in the sky in his tail, you know a fox, and you know a tail, and you know a cloud.
Thank you. Yeah, sometimes I think of writers as being kind of like crows, Like, they're just looking for, like, the shiny things and the edible things, and they'll just fill their nest with it until they have something, right? We're always picking at things. So we have a little bit of time, about 10 minutes, for some questions. So if you have a question, just raise your hand, yell it out, and I'll re-say it into the microphone. Or I can run and give you the microphone, too, whatever you prefer. Don't be shy. Yes. Do you want the microphone or
no? I'm okay. So novels are huge commitments, months and months, and tons of research. Do you find that stories allow you to indulge more things and take bigger swings with your imagination, things that you won't have to commit to for a year or two or five?
In my experience, I mean, a novel I really will work on for 7 or 8 years consistently, whereas the stories I would come back to, and it was really interesting to re-inhabit things that I had started writing 30-plus years earlier. That was fascinating, to re-encounter my earlier writer self. And, you know, as you describe, I mean, I'm so jealous of you're writing your children's and revising your children's, your story at 4:30 a.m. and you were done by 5. occasionally with the flash pieces in this collection, they were conceived very quickly, but then there was a process of honing and going over and over and just being able to re-enter them. And so there's still a lot of time embedded in the stories, but differently.
Yeah, I don't know what your experience is.
I kind of personally like the joy of finishing things. So, I'm working on a novel, but it's like I finished the full first draft, takes months. And then I just feel like I haven't finished it. It's just the first draft, and it's really like not good enough. And then I miss that joy of finishing. Then I go write a story, and I'm like, oh, I finished something. And I think for one story that makes sense. But if you're working on a collection, I think it does take a few years to write it, because you still have to. In fact, sometimes it's more in your head because you have all of these characters, like. There's 10 stories, there's like 10 to 15 characters who you kind of need to know intimately, and you need to live with them for a long time. But writing one story, I think it's like, I find it very enjoyable to take a few weeks and just do that.
Well, actually, writing a short story for me is like painting in watercolor. It's very dangerous. It's not easy. You have to fail or to success. But writing the novel is something like using oil color. If the color is not good, you can cover it with a different color. Yeah. In short story, I feel that you are as a hunter who have only one palette. But in novel, you are a hunter who have many, many palettes. Yeah. And I feel the difference when I wrote a novel in a prison. I read it 5 drafts, and every time I feel that I can change and take off and whatever, and it's ordinary, but the novel at some time. Yeah, but the short story is a kind of a flash, a kind of success of early failing. Yeah. This is what I consider doing, dealing with these two kinds of genres.
Hmm. That's so interesting, because I would have thought that like editing a novel would be more of a problem, because you change one thing and then you have 200 pages to then have to change again, whereas a short story would be like, I changed one character and I have 7 pages to have to deal with. But I don't write either, so I don't know. Does anybody else have a question?
Yes. Does the story sometimes change completely as you write it? Do you always know from the start where you're going and more or less where you're going to end? Or does it start to take shape as you write?
Does the story change as you write it? Do you always know where exactly you're going as you write it? Or does it kind of become something else as you go forth with the story?
Well, actually, many times it changes, yes. You delete something, add something, but the idea of the story, the outlines of the story, or the borders of the story, are still as they are at the very beginning, in my experience. I'm not going to start with a love story about my friend, suppose, and then I wrote about war or about something else. This is for the subject matter. And for the poetic scene in the story, sometimes the short story is a poetic scene you catch from your life and you transfer it into language. So the what you change is to convince the reader what you are writing, not letters and voices. The word C in your story is not S-E-A. It is a creature. Yeah. And what I work a lot is to make him forget that these are letters. These are creatures, there are scenes, there are accidents. They live things with me as a writer. As I live things with many writers. I hope I could, but I don't know if I do it or not.
Yeah, I'm a very messy writer, so my drafts start off very raw, and I do have an idea where I want to go, but it takes multiple drafts to really see my way through with the depth that I need. And I would say with a story as opposed to a novel, there's a really intimate and charged relationship between the ending and everything else. We were talking about endings before, and sometimes the ending will be clear sooner, and then the rest of the story will have to earn the ending, or it will, or I'll just be in the ballpark of the ending and know that I have to keep going deeper and deeper in the process of writing the story to get, you know, to land the ending exactly, and then everything is resonating to this point, and it starts to become very musical and vibrant and rhythmic, and that's the level at which you're working, and so that's sort of what it feels like to me.
Yeah, I really like that, Catherine, because I feel the same way. Like when I start a story, I generally know where it's going to end, but like what makes the process so enjoyable is kind of using language to kind of say exactly what you want to say to get there. But you know, this it's that whole process of discovery to get there. Yeah, a lot of times I know where it's going, but sometimes it does change, right? And a lot of times it changes because you write the entire story, and then you realize, okay, the point of view that is being told from is not correct, right? It's not working. And then you have to rewrite it, and when you rewrite it, it's a different story, really. There's a story in my collection, it's called Whatever Happened, Happened for the Good. It's about, when I first wrote it, it was about this woman who needed to go, she lives in Canada with her family, she needed to go to India for an organ transplant. And it was about her and how that process was traumatic. And then I just wrote it and it wasn't working. And then I rewrote the entire story from her child's point of view. And there was a different story now. It's about like how the child, like it's about the love between the mom and the child and how like kind of almost abandoned she feels with that whole transition. Right? So I think that does happen. Like I kind of know where the story is going, but through the process of writing, it does sometimes change.
So fascinating that you changed that perspective. I think we're out of time. Do you have an outro for us?
I do have an extra.
Yeah, okay, great. And then I want to promo something after you're done that hasn't been approved, if that's okay. I want a promo poetry to go after that. Okay. Hasn't been approved, but I'm going to do it.
Well, thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Sarah, Catherine, Jamal, and Deepa, and in absentia, Steve, for a great evening of short fiction. And thank all of you in the audience for coming to this event. We want to know about your experience here, so please log on to our online survey at kingstonwritersfest.ca. Tell us how we did. And please join the authors here in this room. Normally they'd be outside, but there are so many. We're going to each author authors, why you have to be at a separate table, to sign their books. If you have books to have signed, stay here. If you want to buy some books, go to the Festival Bookstore across the way. Yes, across in the opposite corner. Enjoy the rest of the festival. We hope to see all of you back here tomorrow, it's late tonight. Tomorrow at all of our other events. It's only that we're not even halfway through yet. Give our writers tonight a big hand.
Here on the second floor from 10 a.m. till like 4 p.m. I got a whole bunch of famous poets. I pulled like all of the strings, and they're going to be sitting at a table one at a time doing shifts, and they're going to be writing custom poems for people as a fundraiser for the Kingston Writers Fest. So if you have a new grandchild who's coming in, a wedding you've been invited to, you can go and you'll have a 5-minute interview. They'll ask you all about it, and then they will write you a custom poem on the spot. You will not get this anywhere else. I will see you all there. Go get your books and get them signed.
And you just heard from a September 19th, 2025 Kingston Writers Fest event called Bushwhacked by Inspiration Short Stories. And there you heard a conversation, some readings too, but a conversation between moderator Sarah Xiang and authors Catherine Bush, Deepa Rajagopalan, and Jamal Syed, that all also included a reading by Sarah from Sacred Rage, Selected Stories, which was a posthumous a collection, I believe, that just came out in 2025, that was written by Stephen Hyten. And it is 37 minutes after 5 o'clock. You are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM, streaming live every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock at www.cfrc.ca. Just a reminder, and I'll probably do it one more time, but at least here so it does for sure gets mentioned this hour as well as it did in the first. But just a reminder that I do upload both hours of this show to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. They do remain there 3 years. I usually get that done about 7 o'clock. Right after the show when I get home, but there's actually a book launch at Novel Idea tonight. So I'm heading straight there from here to record that, and you'll be able to catch it here most likely in the next few weeks. On top of that, since I'm kind of talking about it, I did record 10 events in total, I believe, at the Kingston Writers Fest this past fall. And I think this was the fourth one. So there are still several more to go, and those will be airing over the course, interspersed between open mic reading events and book launch or other reading events. Everything will just be kind of interspersed over the next few months. So I see if I'm leaving anything else here, but I do need to play a few things. So anyway, before we move on, I would like to extend my thanks to all of you for tuning in to the first large portion of this show, and an equal thanks to Kingston Writers Fest, their staff and volunteers, and to all involved in the reading, in the conversation and reading event that you heard today. And as mentioned, I look forward to airing more of these over the next few weeks. And you know what? It is just getting ready to turn 40 minutes after 5 o'clock. You know what? I think I will do this now, and then I'll catch you in just a couple of minutes.
Folk Everything is your passport to the finest in folk music. Old, new, and everything in between. The wonderful, the wild, and the weird.
Walk quietly by, he won't bother you. He's a busy man, he's got things to do.
It's all here Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Folk Everything with Hugh on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston.
Greetings, loved ones. This is DJ Nasty Nexus coming to you live and direct from CFRC 101.9. I'm here to bring you the goods from my new show, Classless Radio, airing every Friday night at 11 p.m. I'll be giving you hits and hidden gems all the way from jazz to blues and hip-hop and R&B. Music from the soul that everybody needs. Hop on my wavelengths and get right with the kid to kick off your big weekend. Stay tuned.
I try my best just to be a man.
Tickets are on sale now for Side by Side Union Gallery's annual major fundraiser. Join them on Saturday, February 7th for an evening of live music, artsy activities, and a lottery-style draw where everyone is a winner. Take home a one-of-a-kind artwork and support Union Gallery's nonprofit mission. Come visit the exhibition or check out the online catalog to see the 100-plus works available. Head to uniongallery.ca and get your ticket for Side by Side today.
And again, you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And coming back into what is just officially now sort of the final quarter of, or even less than that, final eighth, well, final quarter of the second hour, final eighth of the show. How's that? It is 42 minutes after 5 o'clock, and I'm going to share a bit of information now, I think, and let me drag that up here. I mentioned I'd like to maybe do some calls for submissions, but also plug a few events. There are some happening this week. I will mention, if I can find it. I mentioned that I'm going to one this evening. So this is a Novel Idea Bookstore. If you're interested, if this all sounds interesting, it starts at 7 o'clock. So it is Gabriel Rockhill will launch Who Paid the Pipers of Marxism. It's a longer title than that, but there's a subtitle after that as well. But anyway, that's happening tonight, Novel Idea Bookstore. You can also look at their Facebook page is the way to do it. There'll be a blurb in there, a listing of some sort. So go there for more information. It does start at 7 o'clock tonight. So if you're close and you want to go, well, you've got plenty of time to get there yet. Let's see. There is coming up also. No, this is next week. This coming week. Let's see. Maybe I'm going to do this. Everything else is coming up next week, so I'm going to. I will mention this one because this is another one that happens right after this show next week. How's that? So, not tonight, next week. It's the second Friday night of the month open mic event hosted and created by Abby Louise. Quoting from their poster, quote, "This is a non-judgmental space open to all ages and walks of life to listen to or share music, poetry, short stories, and each person or group will have 5 to 15 minutes to share." That's the end of the quote. I think what that means is that it just depends on how many people sign up. This runs from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, and it's at Next Church, which is at 89 Colburn Street. Okay, since the rest of these are happening next week, let's go ahead and go into calls for submissions. And let's see if I have these right here. It looks like it. I mistakenly thought it ended sooner. I thought it ended February 2nd. It was actually February 20th at 6 p.m. The 2026 TK, which stands for Theater Kingston Fringe Festival. The applications are now open. So if just double checking here, you know what? Go to their website, www.theaterkingston.com/about-the-TK-fringe. It will, the application, again, deadline is February 20th, 6 p.m. What that does is when they get all of those applications in, they will do a lottery draw, and then they will draw to see who will be able to perform what they've come up with. I believe that the Fringe performances happen, I believe, in the month of August. So there you go. But that kind of gives you an idea. Tower Poetry is celebrating their 75th anniversary, 2025-26. They put out two poetry anthologies a year. The deadline for their summer issue is February 28th. And so go to towerpoetry.ca/submissions. Assembly Press, let's see, their next open submission period, it opens on March 1st. Yeah, this is a lot of times I'm doing these and they're just days away from needing to be acted on. So you're getting plenty of time with these here to do something about them. Think about that. What does it says? Go to their site, Assembly Press. That for submission guidelines is assemblypress.ca/submissions. Again, the next reading period or open submission period is March 1st, and that is for fiction. And Subterranean Magazine's 2026 submission deadlines. Let's see, their spring one is closed, but still open is their summer issue. They're 104th, number 104. It has a theme of guilt. And it's been open for a couple of days, but it's open till March 15th. Subterranean Magazine is published three times a year from an office in East Vancouver and are looking for fiction, poetry, photography, and graphic illustration from, it says, quote, uprising Canadian, U.S., and international writers and artists. Info and guidelines are at www.subterranean.ca. And I think I said it was subterranean, but it's subterranean.ca slash writer's guide submissions. It will give you all of their deadlines. They take them. They open submissions three times a year for different themes. And let's do this one, too. The New Quarterly, their Edna Stabler personal essay contest, quoting from their site, quote, "We are interested in essays in which the writer's personal engagement with a subject provides the frame or through line." So it says work must be unpublished, but there is a lot more information. Go to TNQ, so just those letters, tnq.ca/contest. You will also maybe find some other contests that I won't be able to get into here because I'm going to run out of time. But you will find a list of all of their contests and also their guidelines. And maybe the final one I do here, the Master's Review Prize for New Narratives 2026. This is for emerging or new writers only, looking for stories up to 6,000 words that, quote, push boundaries and subvert expectations and demonstrate an innovative approach to storytelling, end quote. First prize is $3,000 plus online publication and more. There are other things as well. Second and third prize, $300 or $200 plus all of those things too. Guidelines and more. Let's see. The Master's Review Submission Manager, and then type in the Master's Review Prize for New Narratives 2026. I think that will get you there. There is a bit more in this link that I have, but I'm pretty sure that'll get you there. You have until March 31st, so you've got lots of time for that one. So, yeah, I'm just looking at the clock. Let me try to sneak one more in here real quick. This one is deadline is April 1st. So Grain is the Journal of Eclectic Writing, and this is their short grain contest, and accepts both poetry and prose in addition to being published in Grain. It says there are three cash prizes in each. A genre ranging from $500 to $1,000. So anyway, go to grainmagazine.ca/contests/short-grain. And there you go. Let's go ahead and stop here while I have time, because I do have to do a couple of more of these. So let me do this first, and I will be right back.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could borrow a musical instrument free of charge, just like you can borrow books from your local library? We think so too. That's why the Joe Chitlin Memorial Musical Instrument Lending Library, also known as Joe's Mill, has been lending guitars, keyboards, saxophones, and many other instruments to the Kingston community free of charge for almost 20 years. We are a registered charity, relying solely on the generosity of our community to donate their time, money, and instruments to keep this amazing service alive. Find us at www.joesmill.org or Joe's Mill on Facebook for more information on borrowing instruments or contributing to Joe's Mill.
Hello and welcome to Salt Licked in Rapture. I'm your host, Nishan Tung. Salt Licked in Rapture is a sonic exploration of, to quote Virginia Woolf, violent waves of emotion. Featuring both known and lesser-known musicians and poets, a special emphasis is placed on oddball, enigmatic, outsider artists whose work invokes dreamscapes and feelings of alienation, nostalgia, melancholy, existential unease, and yearning. Join me on Fridays at 8 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
And we're getting very close now to the end of the show. And first of all, I'd like to thank all of you again for having tuned in today. Also, earlier to all the Kingston Writers Fest folks who made that event you just heard happen this year. And so thank all of you. And you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located at Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And although I've mentioned it a couple of times, people tune in and out or maybe just have come into the show. I just want to remind everyone that I upload both hours of this show each week to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on CFRCFM.wordpress.com. They remain there 3 years. And again, I'm headed straight to a book launch this evening, so it might be a little later before I get it uploaded this evening. I do hope you can stay tuned to 2 hours of East Coast music in a show called Saltwater Music, hosted by Rob Carnell. It's coming up right after this. To take us there, I chose a 2011 album, Feist, with her metals album, and the cut is called Caught a Long Wind. Hope you enjoy it. Hope you have a great week.
Until